Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Big Sell when we come back. You know, back in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." 17 words. And that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Well, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. It's public business that's carried on in commercial paper. Commercial papers, things like stocks and bonds and Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and debt, usury. Now, back in 1965, Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin versus clad coin and currency. Well, that's true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper versus gold and silver. Now, you know, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933 when they did it, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy those property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our property rights, our duties, our capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights, and that's because property is the holy grail. Property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me show you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschoolers. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our business school is also available in compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. And once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? Yeah, I'm sitting here reading the Environment and Climate News. The Environment and Climate News, a publication, comes out of Chicago, Illinois. And I couldn't get over how they're making the big sell on this thing that we call global warming. You know, if you think about it, selling. I'm an old-timey salesman. My dad was a salesman. And I'm familiar with cons and rip-offs and everything goes floor-to-ceiling, wall-to-wall, regardless of cost, loss, or value. But I'm absolutely amazed when I get to looking at some of the things that we are buying. You know, our society buys things like cancer. And we buy fluoride, cholesterol, global warming, 9/11. It's like selling refrigerators to Eskimos. And my dad told me one time, he said, "Well, don't laugh. Now, selling refrigerators to Eskimos is a big business, and it makes all the sense in the world." At the time, I was about 10 or 11, maybe 12 years old, and I was absolutely incredulous. What do you mean, selling a refrigerator to an Eskimo? I mean, they live up here where it's damn cold that you probably couldn't get your refrigerator to work. I said, no, see, what you do is you sell them the refrigerator to keep things from freezing. Yeah, you put it in the refrigerator, see, it's insulated, and so it keeps it from freezing. Said, well, that's a novel way to sell an appliance to somebody that doesn't need it, can't use it, shouldn't have it, and probably doesn't want it. Well, think about that for a minute. You know, we Americans, and I suppose most of the people around the world, are buying things that they don't need, can't use, don't want, and shouldn't have. You know, things like tobacco and whiskey and drugs, all of which are legal. You know, far be it from us to buy things that are illegal, but I wonder what the need for it is. What's the purpose behind it? It's consumerism. Government is constantly selling us things, you know, like nuclear waste. Nuclear waste. And then we're buying nuclear waste. Well, you know, when was the last time you went down to Walmart and said, "I'd like to get a 5-pound package of nuclear waste"? I mean, you're not actively out in the marketplace searching out bargains in nuclear waste, are you? But you're buying fluoride, a toxic poison, a byproduct of the aluminum industry. a substance that is so toxic, so poison, that you can't dispose of this stuff without a special permit. I mean, if you had a 55-gallon barrel of fluoride, do you know what that would cost? Did you think you could just take that out here to the local landfill and dump it? Oh, God, no. You'd have to take that out to a toxic landfill, toxic dump. It would cost you thousands of dollars to dump a 50-gallon barrel of fluoride. And so the makers, the guys that are creating this toxic waste, you know, had this problem. How do we get rid of this stuff? And so some enterprising young, I'm assuming some enterprising young Madison Avenue advertising executive came up with the solution. He said, let's put it in toothpaste and sell it to the people. I imagine somebody must have looked at this guy incredulously and said, surely you can't be serious that you're going to take this god-awful toxic waste over here, put it in people's toothpaste and sell it to them. No, it's true. What we'll do, we'll tell people that this fluoride over here is good for their teeth. It's good for their health. They'll love it. Then we'll put it in their toothpaste and we'll sell it to them. We'll take this toxic waste that costs thousands of dollars a barrel to get rid of, and we'll charge thousands of dollars a barrel to sell it. We'll go into the aluminum business to make aluminum, and we'll end up selling toxic waste and making a profit off of it. Kind of reminded me of my wife. Years ago, she used to have a shingle mill. And out here in the Midwest, and from here further east, they have what's called Eastern Red Cedar. And they cut it up and they make little boards out of it and they line closets with it. And that's because moths hate it. Moths, they don't like Eastern Red Cedar. It's hard to sell this Eastern Red Cedar to a family of moths because they just absolutely don't like it. And so people buy it and line their closets to keep the moths out of their clothes. No self-respecting moth would be found in a closet lined with red cedar. It's very popular. They make cedar chests out of it also, and there's other uses. But there's a byproduct called sawdust. You know, when you've got a mill, you know, you got saw blades circling around, and as you're cutting these boards, you have saw dust. Well, this sawdust over here is a waste product. How are you going to do with it? See? So the ordinary self-respecting sawmill in the olden days, they used to build a fire, made what they called a burner, say a burner. And they'd take the sawdust and the slabs and the wood scraps and one thing and another, and they'd run it up in this burner and they'd burn it. See? And somebody came along one day and said, oh, my God, we can't burn this stuff. Why, it causes smoke. And the smoke is a pollutant. It's an air pollutant. So they came along and said, hey, we got to have a law that bans the burning of this waste product called slabs and sawdust. And so they did. And so now these sawmill operators are sitting here with all this waste product. You know, what are we going to do with this? And so my wife, she got thinking about that. And so she took some sawdust and she put it in an old sock. You know, I don't know if it was an old sock or a brand new sock, but she put it in a sock. And then she sewed the top of the sock. You know. And it smelled just like red cedar, see? And so she stuck it in the closet to see what it would do with the moths. And so here's this bag of sawdust in an old sock, and then it's in the closet here, and it repels moths. And so she got to thinking about that and said, no, why are we cutting these cedar trees up to start with? Well, we're cutting up these cedar trees so that we can make boards to put into the closet so that we can repel moths. And so she put the sock full of sawdust in the closet, and it repelled moths. And it was a great invention because, you see, for $3 or $4.95, you could buy this sock full of sawdust to repel your moths instead of paying $500 and then paying some guy $1,000 to come and line your closet with cedar boards. You could do the same thing for $5. And so that's what sales and salesmanship is all about. It's finding something that has a value, that is useful, that's productive. It's what I call useful, productive, meaningful work. Useful, productive, meaningful work. It's something that somebody can use. Now, these moths, they eat holes in your clothes. Let's, you know, try it out. You know, you go down to the store and you buy a coat and you pay $80 for it. And one day the moths get into the coat and they chew holes in it. And all of a sudden you feel self-conscious wearing this coat with holes. Actually, the holes don't affect the warmth or the utility of the coat a great deal. I've got a coat or two and a garment, a shirt or two with holes, you know, in the sleeves. And I notice that when I'm wearing one of my shirts with holes in the sleeves, people look at me, they stare at me, and they say, what kind of a fool would wear a shirt with a hole in the sleeve, you know, or a pair of pants with a hole in the knee? And so, I do. I wear them. It doesn't really affect their utility a great deal, but people become self-conscious over style. See? And so I notice that when you're wearing your Levi's and you wash them a few times, they fade. See? And over time, they get holes in them. And then one day I was in a store, And honest to God, I'm not just making this up. I saw these wore-out Levi's on the counter. And they were selling for $29. This is quite a few years ago when this style or this fashion was in. But yeah, you'd buy these Levi's, and they were already wore out and faded. and you pay $29 for these worn-out, faded Levi's because there was a style, see? I don't know who thunk that up, but, you know, it kind of came out of Madison Avenue, you know, some New York advertising agency, and said, hey, we got these wore-out clothes, and they're all faded, and they're ready for the rag pile over here. So let's create a style. Let's create a fashion, and then we'll sell these worn-out Levi's to people, and we'll charge them, you know, instead of a dollar for a wore-out pair of Levi's, we'll charge them $29.95. And so, you know, get this, here's the Levi company trying to turn out these worn-out clothes, and so they had to invent new technology to wash this denim until it faded, and then to get holes in it, you know, without just cutting them with scissors. They had to make these holes look like they were worn in there, you know. It was quite a fashion there for quite a while. And so, can you see this? Now listen, they got a new thing out here that they're selling. They're going to sell it pretty shortly. It's called a bad bank. Have you heard that yet? They're going to sell it. Yeah, the Congress. The people out here in the Congress, the politicians, people have been to college and have degrees after their name. See, they got some bankrupt banks, like Citigroup and J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, you know, Wachovia and so on. These bankrupt banks, because of their bad management and because of their foolishness, they made a lot of bad loans, and these bad loans now, they're coming back to put these banks out of business. And so the banks went to the Congress and said, hey, listen, here's what we need. We want you to create this bad bank, and see, and then we'll sell all of our bad loans to this bad bank for 100 cents on the dollar, and then we'll pass our bad judgment and our bad debts on to the American taxpayer. Let him suffer the losses from these bad loans from these dumb banks. I say dumb banks. They're actually not that dumb. I mean, people that run their businesses into the ground and then go to the Congress and then get a bailout package for $700 billion and sell it to people out here, by God, that ain't so dumb. Sounds pretty smart to me. I don't know if buying those securities is very smart, but I know selling them is real smart. And here's the banks. Now they're going to Congress. And then I saw the other day the auto companies, you know, they said, hell, if it's good for banks, it must be good for autos. And so they're in Washington looking for bailout money. Now, if it's good for the banks and if it's good for the auto industry, you know, well, isn't it good for the airline industry and the aircraft industry and all the rest of these industries out here? Hell, it's good for all of us, isn't it? But the thing that just absolutely boggles my mind is people want to buy it. It would seem like to me that if I came to you and I said, now listen, I made a bad business decision here some time back, and I've got this house, and the house, I got a mortgage for $500,000, the house is worth $300,000, and then I'm making $3,000 a month payments on this house, which is really only worth, you know, can only support a mortgage of $2,000. So what I want to do is I want to sell this mortgage to you. I don't want to discount it by a third, or by 40% or something like that. I want to sell it to you for 100 cents on the dollar. So I want you to just write out a check for the full amount, and then you take this bad loan so that I can take your good money and go invest it in something else. My God, you know, that takes some salesmanship to do that. And so what you do is you go to Congress, and Congress will do that all day long. And that's what they're doing. And we elect these people. We get up early in the morning and go down here, and we vote for these people, put them into office. You know, I say, no, that's salesmanship. You talk about the big sell now. When you can sell this kind of insanity to people, and they, my God, they buy it and they love it. Now let's take a look at cancer. You've heard me report on cancer here a number of times, and it doesn't fail. They're just constantly out here selling cancer. It's on the news every night. Katie Couric is selling cancer every night. When you see an ad or you see a news piece where they have found some new cancer, news cancer technology, a new thingy over here that they're selling, they put it on the 6 o'clock news. Katie Couric and Brian Williams come out and they say, well, let me report. Let me tell you about this. Here's our science editor, and he's going to explain this new breast cancer technology. And people watch this, and they call this news. See, it's not news. It doesn't have anything to do with news. It has to do with selling. It has to do with we're selling cancer. Now, the crazy part about this cancer thing is that they tell you we don't have a cure. It costs about $100,000 for the treatment, and we don't know what causes it. And so I've thought about that, and I said, Jesus, if I had a car, and I took my car into the mechanic, he said, I don't know what's wrong with it, and I don't know how to fix it. But for $25 an hour, I'll work on it until you run out of money. I don't know of anybody that would bring their car into Mike and say, hey, Mike, can you fix my car? He listens to it. He says, I don't know what's wrong with it, and I don't know how to fix it. But for $25 an hour, I'll work on it with gusto. I don't know of anybody that takes their car to a mechanic like that, but my God, if you've got breast cancer, you go to the doctor. He says, I don't know what causes breast cancer, and I don't know how to cure it. But for $100,000, I'll treat it until you run out of money, and I'll treat it with gusto. We buy that. We love it. Sells $500 billion a year worth of oncology and cancer. Now, in spite of the fact that there are 14 cures to cancer, I've reported on all 14 of these cures to cancer. Over time, people have come in with cures to cancer, like Essiac. You know, And the lady that discovered this, actually, she didn't discover it. It was an Indian tribe up in Canada. They'd had it for hundreds of years. You know, somebody got cancer in their Indian tribe, they'd give them bloodroot and some herbs, and the cancer would go away. They didn't know if that was a cure or not. They didn't understand disease and cures. They just knew that if you had this lump growing on you and you took this certain herb over here, the lump would go away. And they thought, well, that sounds pretty good to us. And so they stuck with it. And so when the white man got up there to Canada, they were getting cancer. And so they didn't know what to do with it. And so they were cutting, hacking, whacking, and radiating and doing everything. And then the patients were dying. And so this lady, her name was Renee Cassie, and she's a nurse in the hospital. And this lady came in, and she had a scar on her. And the nurse, Cassie, asked her, where'd you get the scar? And she said, well, I had this cancer. And I had a neighbor who was an Indian lady, and the Indian lady said, here's what we Indians use for those lumps that you have. And so I took it and ate it away, and this left a scar, and so the cancer's gone. And this nurse said, well, that's pretty novel. And could you tell me what that formula is? Said, yeah. So she wrote it down, and Renee Cassie went out and tested it, and sure enough, it worked. And so she told the doctors and medical professions, and they all rejected it. And then they took it to the parliament, and the parliament ruled on it and voted on it in 1937. Said, my God, if you bring that stuff into Canada, we'll throw your hiney in jail. And then they outlawed it in Canada, and then they tried to sell it in other places. You can't sell a cancer cure. Like, that's against the law. Cancer treatment, now you can sell that all day long. Cancer cures, that's against the law. We'll put you in jail if we do that. And the people love it. They buy it. And then they come up with marches on cancer and runs for cancer, and won't you come out and race for cancer today and all this. I don't do that. I don't see any real point in it. If there was a real earnest interest in finding a cure to cancer and so on, I might want to participate. But I can't understand why we would want to spend money, time, effort, and energy to find another cure to cancer when you've already got 14 and you don't use those, because if you do, we'll put you in jail. Well, what the hell are you going to do if you found a 15th, 16th, or 17th cure to cancer? It just gives you another two or three ways to be prosecuted and jailed, doesn't it? Hell, you can go to jail without finding a cure to cancer. There's easier ways to do that, seems like to me. So anyway, selling cancer over here, if you think about it now for a minute, it's something that we want to buy. You know, we want a cure to cancer, so we'll buy that and we'll spend money on it. But if you find it, we'll throw you in jail. We've already got 14 that we've already discovered, but we need to find more. So we want to spend. What we're really trying to do here is to spend money on cancer research, so that we can keep the cancer researchers employed finding a cure for cancer. And then when they find it, we jail them. And we say, well, that's no good. What is this? Isn't this insane? Wouldn't you say? I looked at it and I thought I was kind of crazy. But now this fluoride, I like this one. This was another one of the big cells that came on the market here years ago. See, back in the 1930s, they wanted to make aluminum to build airplanes. They found out that aluminum wasn't just a novelty metal, that it was actually light and strong, and you could build airplanes out of it. And so they started making more and more of it. Well, the more and more you make of it, the more and more fluoride you come up with. This fluoride was nasty stuff. It killed people, killed livestock. I mean, it was toxic beyond description. In fact, I was reading some paper the other day, and I think fluoride is more toxic than cyanide and arsenic. Now, normal people avoid cyanide and arsenic. In fact, the Food and Drug Administration, they don't want you to eat apricot seeds. Did you know that? Not that apricot seeds are all that tasty. I've eaten a few of them. And I'm not talking about the hulls, no. Most of you people, when you eat an apricot, you know you eat the apricot, and then on the inside there's what we call the pit. And boy, that thing is hard. It's like wood. Well, you take that pit, and you put it on an anvil, and then you hold it with a pair of pliers. And then you take a hammer and you bang on it a couple of times, and then that hard pit will break in two. And inside of it, there's a little nut in there, a little kernel. It's kind of like an almond. You know, you take an almond and it's got this hard shell around it. You break the shell. Inside of it, there's a kernel. We call it an almond. Unless you're from California, they call them almonds, A-M-O-N-D-S. And I thought they were A-L-M-O-N-D-S, and then I saw some A-M-O-N. I said, what in the hell is an almond? I guess that's the way they spell it in California. I was out there in California. I saw this black and white animal. I said, look at that skunk. And the guy corrected me. He said, it's not a skunk. That's a civet cat. I said, that's a what? He said, that's a civet cat. Civet cat? What in the hell is a civet cat? You know, he was looking at me like I was suffering from the terminal stupids. I called it a skunk. I said, does that thing smell bad? He says, oh, God, they smell terrible. Is it black and white? Yeah. I said, do you have skunks out here? No, we have civet cats. Yeah. You know, only in California. Well, anyway, get back into this fluoride story over here. The fluoride people over here were spending tons of money to get rid of this toxic waste, and somebody came up with the idea and said, hey, this fluoride's great stuff. It prevents tooth decay. Now, we've been doing this for about, I don't know, 50, maybe 60 years, and it doesn't prevent tooth decay at all. No, wait a minute. If you think that fluoride prevents tooth decay, you know, you've been sold on the big sell over here. And so I know that's what is reported on the news, and I know that that's what you've always heard all your life, and I know that's what you learned when you went to school, but it's not true. You know, not everything that you've heard in your life is necessarily true. just in case you thought for a minute that everything you heard there when you went to college was the gospel. It's not. I don't know how much truth comes out of college. And there's some, no two ways about that, because there's a lot of deception. And in order for me to deceive you, I've got to tell you some truth. There's no two ways about that. But they went out here and they sold us by telling you that it was good for your health. And I got to thinking about that. You know, we got a problem here with nuclear waste. And so out in Nevada, they've got this mountain out there. It's called Yucca Mountain. And they've been working and building and hacking and whacking, digging holes in it and one thing and another for the last, I don't know, God only knows how long, 50 years, 40 years, I don't know, as long as I can remember. I'm an old man. And I don't think they've ever put a dollar's worth of nuclear waste in it yet, spent a lot of money on it, and then we're not using it. But then it's kind of normal, you know. You spend a lot of money on something that you don't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and probably don't want, but I was wondering, what in the hell are you doing that for? You know, instead of spending your money, you know, on investments that have gone bad for somebody else, and then paying 100 cents on the dollar for it, why don't you take that money and go on a princess cruise, take your old lady out and buy her a steak dinner or something like that, you know, do something. You know, something for you, you know, instead of for somebody else. But anyway, I think about that nuclear waste, and I said, hell, if you can sell a toxic poison like fluoride to people in their toothpaste, why can't we sell nuclear waste to people? They're all opposed to this Yucca Mountain thing over here. People don't want nuclear waste stored in their nuclear power plant. They don't want it stored at Yucca Mountain, and they don't know what the hell to do with it. I got a brand new idea. Here's what it is. Nuclear waste. We're going to sell it as a chocolate flavor enhancer. Now, everybody loves chocolate, don't they? And since we all like chocolate, let's just put a little bit of nuclear waste in it. Not enough to kill you. Like, come on, let's be intelligent. We're not gonna put enough nuclear waste in here, you know, to croak you today. We'll just put a little bit in. So, and then we'll give you a warning and say, well, don't eat too much chocolate. You know, which is like throwing a piece of meat down in front of a Doberman pincher, and then instructing the dog, don't eat it. Just lick it. See, don't eat that, Fido. Just lick it. That's the way we'll do with chocolate. And we'll put just a little bit of nuclear waste in all of the chocolate in the country. I think we could get rid of all the nuclear waste in the country that way, sell it to the people. And then the power industry, think of the benefits for this. See, the power industry over here, which has this god-awful toxic nuclear waste, and they don't want to have to do with it. If they'd follow the lead of the aluminum industry over here, we'll put it in your food supply. I mean, we can't put it in your water because we already got fluoride in there. See? I mean, there's another industry already got dubs on putting their waste product in your water. But I don't know of anybody that's got dubs on putting waste products into the chocolate supply. And, you know, water is kind of a necessity for people, and chocolate is just almost a necessity. I mean, we all like chocolate, don't we? Now, you could also use it as a cure for dandruff. And say you could put nuclear waste into your Selsun Blue dandruff-removing shampoo, see? And people have dandruff, and they don't like it. And so if you told people that nuclear waste, now we've got to come up with a new name for nuclear waste because it's got a bad name to it, see? Nobody wants to wash their hair in waste, so we have to have some new label that we're going to hang on here, you know. And so I'll leave that to you. You come up with a new name for this nuclear waste, and then we'll call it Nuclear Revival. Okay, that sounds religious, doesn't it? Nuclear Revival. It's going to revive your scalp and your hair. And you see, for the few, you know, you got 300 million people in the country, and all of us have to wash our hair, you know, once in a while. And so, if you just put just a smidgen of nuclear waste in every bottle of shampoo, you know, before long you could take the whole nuclear waste industry over here, you know, and we could call it, you know, by our new name, our new Madison Avenue term, and then we would sell it to people, you know, as maybe a beauty aid, a cure for dandruff. We could put it in a deodorant and make your body smell good. Would you like to make your body smell better? We could put it in as a fertilizer to grow bigger roses, couldn't we? I got to give you a reminder here while you're mulling that one over for a minute. Got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors and publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us directly there, area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the big sell. And I just thought I'd introduce you to a few of the things that we buy every day, like cancer, fluoride, cholesterol, global warming, 9/11, and selling refrigerators to Eskimos. Now, I'm sure that Eskimos that buy refrigerators must need them, or they wouldn't buy them. But Eskimos live for long, long thousands and thousands of years without refrigerators. All of a sudden, now they can't live without them. They're up there living, you know, their lives and doing their thing, you know, for thousands of years without snowmobiles, and all of a sudden, now they don't know how to take care of their dogs. They have to now have a snowmobile, which now requires gasoline. Now, if they ever run out of gasoline, they're SOL. Their dogs, you know, they can breed dogs and feed dogs walrus fat, you know, and they had a source of transportation. I'm not sure that they've got the technology to drill oil wells up there, you know, if civilization collapses, but just thought I'd pass that one along to you. Now, I was reading the Environment and Climate News. Remember I mentioned that Environment and Climate News is a publication put out by the Heartland Institute. And these guys, I got to tell you, for $36 a year, you can subscribe to this. And they put out three or four of these. They put out the Budget and Tax News. They put out Environment and Climate News. And they've got one on health, you know, and health and care insurance and one thing and another. And the reason I subscribe to it is because it's like reading Mad Magazine. You know, I enjoy a good laugh every once in a while. And they had an article in here that deals with the Minnesota Green Group fights wind power transmission. Listen, you can't make this kind of stuff up, kids. Listen, I've got to tell you. Minnesota Green Group fights wind power transmission line. Let me read that to you again. There's a Minnesota Green Group. Now, for the rest of you people in the world, here in the United States, we have a thing called the Greenies. Greens, they call them, you know, green technology. And what they're doing is they're trying to wean us away from coal and oil and nuclear power. And they're one of their big things, not the only, but one of the big things is that the coal power pollutes the air. And oil costs a lot of money, and I don't know what their bitching life is about nuclear power plants and so on, but they don't like it. As far as I know, they all use electricity, but my God, they hate the way the power companies produce it. And so they want wind power and solar power. They want green, renewable energy sources. Well, one of the things that they're doing here is building big windmills. They build these humongous big windmills, bigger than your windmills over in Holland. You know, I mean, they're kind of interesting to look at. You're driving down the road, and you say, what in the hell is that? And you look out there, and you see this great big windmill spinning around out there. And so the Greenies want to build all these big windmills, and that's because this wind is a renewable resource. You see, it's just out there, and it's free, and it doesn't pollute anything. So that's what they like about it. And so they go into the legislatures and they jump up and down, paw the ground, bite the bushes, and rant and rave. They tell us that we got to get rid of these coal-fired power plants because it puts CO2 into the atmosphere, and it's causing global warming, and this global warming now is going to kill us all. If we don't get windmills out there to replace coal-fired power plants, we're all going to die. And I took a look at that, and I said, who in the hell is selling? What are these guys selling out here? I mean, I'm a salesman, and we got a big sell going on here. And it's like buying mortgages, you know, that are no good. It's like buying a house for $500,000 that sells all day long for $300,000 if you can find a buyer. There ain't no buyers at three. It's probably worth less than that. And so I want to get in on the deal. I want to go spend $500,000 on a $300,000 house. I can't wait. Send me a salesman by as soon as possible, would you? And that's what we're buying here. You know, taxpayers, that's what we're buying, you know, from Congress. They're going to create a bad bank over here. I thought, well, that sounds like a good investment to me. We need to make more of them. What we need is more leaders like Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, Merrill Lynch. I mean, these people know how to lose money. I mean, these are businessmen with MBAs. We need to follow their example. We need to learn their investment strategies and techniques so that we can do what they're doing. See, we used to think that we needed to make money and make a profit. No, you fools, you blind, you nitwits. We need to learn how to invest to lose money. We need to learn how to buy $500,000 houses that are worth $300,000 and pay 100 cents on the dollar without taking a discount. We need to learn how to pay retail plus 10%. I don't know what the hell you want these discounts for. What we need to learn how to do is how to lose money. Well, anyway, the environment and climate news puts on this story. I'm going to read you the story here. Listen to this. And I'm telling you now, only in America. A Minnesota environmental activist group is fighting against the construction of power lines to deliver wind power to the state. Shortly after, environmental activist groups successfully pressured the state governments. Now, you see this environment groups, you know, they go in here and they to the legislature and they lobby these legislatures and they say, close down these nuclear power plants, close down these coal-fired power plants, and we want renewable energy. So they succeeded. And the legislature says, okay, we'll do it. We'll put in wind power. Well, less than 2 years after the state legislature passed an aggressive renewable power mandate, the Citizens Energy Task Force has registered as a legally intervening party and is drafting legal arguments asserting the proposed wind power transmission lines unlawfully threaten regional wildlife. When Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty signed into law a bill requiring the state's residents to purchase 25% of their power from renewable resources by 2025, he and the state legislature likely believed that they had cemented the goodwill of environmental activist groups for many years to come. The spirited opposition to the wind power transmission lines is proving such hopes to be illusory. Now, they have stronger winds in the Dakotas, and so CAP-X 2020 is a project by Xcel Energy and 11 other regional utilities to deliver wind power from turbines in North and South Dakota to Minnesota. Wind power transmission from the Dakotas is desirable because wind resources are significantly more abundant there than in Minnesota. Okay, now here's what that means, you know, translated into plain language. The wind blows in North Dakota and the wind doesn't blow in Minnesota. So the people in Minnesota, that's the Greenies now, they want wind power generation of electricity. So they go to the legislature and say, hey, we want wind power. So the governor and the legislature says, okay, you've beat us down. Okay, we'll do it. And so they passed a law. They said all the people of Minnesota have to buy this wind power, which costs more. Costs you much more to buy wind power. See, but you got to buy it because it's clean. You got that, dummies? All right. Talk about the big sell now. See? And so the people are now going to buy more expensive wind power. Now, the problem in Minnesota is the wind doesn't blow there. We got the same problem we have here in Missouri. I mean, you can build these big wind power machines all day long here in the Ozarks, and then you'll freeze to death in the dark because the wind doesn't blow here. And then when it does blow, it's intermittent. You know, we get these tornadoes. You know, it comes through here. It comes through at 300 miles an hour, and you get dead calm. So, you know, we've either got wind or none. Now, most people want electricity 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I don't know about you, but most people want to be able to flip on the switch anytime of the day or night, mainly at night, and then expect light. We here in Missouri expect light even when the wind isn't blowing. We want electricity to work whether the wind's blowing or not. I don't know about the rest of you people out there, but that's the way these dumbbells down here in the Ozarks are. And so the people in Minnesota said, well, we need to go to where the wind blows, and the wind blows over here next door in the Dakotas, which is 700 miles away. So what we need to do is to generate electricity with these windmills out here where the wind blows in the Dakotas. Now, we need to move the electricity from North and South Dakota to Minnesota. Now, they do that through wires. For those of you that are not accustomed to electricity, they do that through wires, and they call those transmission lines. And so you're going to build a windmill over here in North Dakota, and then you're going to take the electricity from that windmill, put it into a wire. And you're going to build a bunch of towers, you know, about every quarter of a mile. You need four of those towers per mile. You're going to need 700 miles of them. So you got to have 2,800 towers to move that electricity from North Dakota over here to Minnesota so that you people can spend more money buying wind power than you can on coal-fired power. But nevertheless, I'm not here arguing with them. I'm just here as a reporter telling you. Now, the opposition to this power line isn't coming from the coal industry. It isn't coming from the nuclear industry. I mean, it's not the polluters out here that are bitching about this. It's the greenies that wanted it. Honest to God, I'm not making this up. I'm reading it to you right out of the paper. Now, I could understand it, you know, if the Gilroy Coal Company came out here lobbying and writing bad press and telling you that that you're going to kill all the turtles and coons and possums out here if you build these transmission lines. I didn't know that those transmission lines were a threat to the wildlife out there. This is a new one on me. We have transmission lines all over down here. I've never heard a single complaint by anybody that it's killing the coons, the deer, the possums, or anybody else. As far as I can tell, when you put up these transmission lines, you can walk underneath them. I know I do. I got power lines all over my farm out here. They put them up in the air. Well, once in a while, you get an ice storm, you know, comes through or something like that, knocks them down, and the power company has to come up, put them back up. But I would submit to you that whether you got nuclear power or you got wind power or you got coal power, you know, you got electricity, and don't you have to move? Last time I heard, they can't put that electricity in 55-gallon barrels and put it on the railroad. I thought they had to put it in wires and... All right, now, enough of this making fun. Let's get down to the serious stuff here. So, there's opposition to these power lines. See, to deliver this wind power from the Dakotas, however, the CapEx 2020 will have to build 700 miles of new transmission lines across the northern plains. And they're running into opposition to these power lines. We want smaller scale projects closer to where load is and where there would be less harmful impacts, Citizens Energy Task Force attorney Paula McAbee told Greenwire on December the 1st. Now, did you get that? I'm going to read that to you again. Listen to this. We want smaller scale projects closer to where the load is. We want these windmills built right here, close to where the power is going to be used. Well, that means that each one of you homeowners out there needs a windmill. So why the hell don't you build your own windmill? I don't know. Quite frankly, I don't think I've got enough money to build that big old windmill out there. And so, but get this, they want it built closer to the load. Well, hell, there ain't any wind there. Don't you have to build these windmills where there's wind? I remember up in Massachusetts, they had a wind project up there, and they were going to put it out in the ocean. You know, they had some shallow water out in the ocean. The wind blows out there, and they wanted to build these wind power turbines out there. And guess who was opposed to that? Now, it wasn't the nuclear power industry. It wasn't the coal producers. It wasn't the oil industry. It was the greenies again. Don't build those wind turbines out there where the wind blows. Build those wind turbines over here where there's still air, where they won't work. Honest to God, I'm not making this up. I'm reading it to you right here from the, get this, it's from the Environment and Climate News, put out by the Heartland publication. It's called the Heartland Institute. Get this down. Right, get your pen and paper out there, children. Heartland Institute over here. Why don't you call them on the telephone? They got a number here. It's 312-377-4000. See, they got an easy phone number to remember. It's 312-377. You got to write that down. And the last four numbers is 4000. And the Environment and Climate News is available on the internet. Point your web browser to www.heartland. That's heartland.org. How do you like that? Additional regularly updated information on global climate change is available at globalwarmingheartland.org. Boy, that's a mouthful, isn't it? Can you say globalwarmingheartland, all one word, .org? $36 a year. Environment and Climate News is published 10 times a year at the Heartland Institute. Subscriptions are $36 a year, and you can order online at www.heartland.org. Heartland Institute is a nonprofit, nonpartisan public policy research organization serving the nation's federal and state elected officials, journalists, Heartland members, and other opinion leaders, and its activities are tax-exempt under Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code. Isn't that just real special? They don't pay no taxes. Hey, those are the kind of people we can relate to, okay? They don't pay tax. Now, these green motives are being questioned. And it says here, we want smaller-scale projects. Citizens Energy Task Force says it fears if the transmission lines are built, some coal power might also be transmitted along the lines. Oh, my God, heaven forbid that some coal power plant over there might transmit some of their electric power down the same line. Approval of the long transmission lines isn't needed for renewable energy or for community reliability and would negatively impact the environment, particularly at the Mississippi River crossing, the organization argues on its website. Excuse me, but aren't there power lines across the Mississippi River right now? And there's another little thought I just kind of molded over. Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here, that we've got this power line over here, and what's their bitch? Their bitch is that, well, the coal-powered electricity might go down the same wire. Hey, hang on a second here before we've taken total leave of our senses. Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion there's a calm day in North Dakota and the wind isn't blowing. If the wind doesn't blow, then the turbines, these wind turbines, won't be producing any electricity. Did you people over in Minnesota want to do without electricity today because the wind isn't blowing in North Dakota? Or would you kind of like some coal-fired electricity coming down the same power line to power your home, your factories, and your businesses? So, honest to God, I'm not making this up now. And here's the thing that's so damn scary. These people are adults with college degrees, and they vote. Let me read that to you again. The Citizens Energy Task Force says it fears that if the transmission lines are built, some coal power also might be transmitted along those power lines. That's what their fear is. My God, I think I'll write a letter to my power company. Tell them, for God's sake, don't send any nuclear power down your power lines. Don't send any coal power down your power lines. Or don't send any wind power down your power lines. I'm telling you, these people are absolutely lunatic. They're mad. They're crazy. They're off the wall. And there's a reason for that. There's a senator. Minnesota State Representative Joyce Pepin questioned the motives of environmental activist groups fighting the power lines. The Citizens Energy Task Force is showing their true anti-consumer colors by opposing the construction of new power lines to transmit the very wind power they claim to support, said Pepin. Their all-or-nothing approach should be recognized for what it is. It's environmental extremism that only serves to drive up the cost to ratepayers. Well, bravo. I mean, here's a politician that says, God, that sounds like anti-consumerism. You know, you don't have to be real smart here to figure out that the objective of these greens over here doesn't have anything to do with electricity. They got some other agenda afoot here. They got some other agenda. First of all, they come out here and they say, we got to have alternative energy. So we say, okay, you wore us down, we'll buy into your alternative energy. Then when we say, okay, we're going to buy it, they say, oh, no, we can't have that. You give them what they want and they still ain't happy. All right, well, that's what happens when you have a two-year-old kid, so you swat him on the ass and you say, now stand up, sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told, punk. And that's the way you deal with it. Now, the truth of the matter is, there is some sanity out here in the real world. You're not going to find it very, very much of it very often. Once in a while, you'll find a little sanity. So let me give you the name and number here of some sane people for a change. All of you lunatics out there, you don't want to subscribe to this. It'll blow a hole in your whole thinking process. But if you've got any sanity left, and it's called the Heartland Publication. It's put out by the Heartland Institute. And the paper that you want here is called the Environment and Climate News. Environment and Climate News. That was an article in their Volume 12, Number 2, February 2009 edition. It's $36 a year. You can probably afford $36. That's about the price of a book that you're going to buy, you know, down at Barnes & Noble. And they've got a phone number here. I just get them on the phone. It's 312-377-4000. I mean, I could give you their mailing address, but hell, you might send them a letter and spend 40 cents and support the Postal Service. And I'm not sure they deserve being supported. It's 312-377-4000. That's our phone number. Or you can go to Heartland. They got a heartland.org. You know, www.heartland.org. Hey, I'm out of time here, kids. I've got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And